Turn over to Proverbs 10 tonight. We finally have made it out of that long introduction, the introduction to Proverbs, about as long as the Proverbs. But it's telling us about the importance of wisdom. I guess we could do a little quizzy here. What is wisdom? There you go. You probably want a star or something. Skillfully using knowledge. It's not information. It's more than the information. It's how to use the information. Can it be obtained quickly? By its very nature, it is a discipline. It takes time. The old saying is, what is wisdom? It's making good decisions. How do you get wisdom? Making bad decisions. Part of it is you're just going to make some mistakes along the way, and that's the way it works. That happens that way if you're going to learn how to play the piano. You never played the piano before. When you first start out, you probably hit more wrong notes than right notes. Just the way it works. As you go along, you hopefully get a little better. And that's true of almost every endeavor that we face in life. So hopefully by now have been prepared to sort of think, okay, now what are these little snippets, these little nuggets of wisdom? We've been talking about how we need to apply, how we need to learn them, how we need to put ourselves under this discipline of training. So now that we're convinced that wisdom is something we need, then how do we, what are the little bits and pieces that we need to look at? Well, we look at Proverbs 10 tonight, and I'd like for us to read through it. What I want you to do tonight, I'm going to make you do some work. I want you to pick out among these Proverbs, and every verse is a couplet, pick out something that catches your attention, something that is striking to you, perhaps applicable to you. I want you to tell us which proverb that you identify with, or which one seems to be applicable to your situation, and why. Tell us why. So, you got work to do. We'll read through them first. I'm going to read out of the King James. I've studied these from several different versions, and everything reads about the same with a little bit of difference. But most of it's pretty much the same. Let's read them. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 1, it begins with the Proverbs of Solomon. So as we've had a few Proverbs thrown in, bits and pieces so far, but mainly we've been dealing with this long parable extolling wisdom. Now we get down to the nitty-gritty. The actual Proverbs themselves. Here they go. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame. Blessings are upon the head of the just, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. The wise in heart will receive commandments, but a prating fool shall fall. He that walketh uprightly walketh surely, but he that perverteth his ways shall be known. He that winketh with the eye causeth sorrow, but a prating fool shall fall. The mouth of a righteous man is a well of life, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Hatred stirreth up strife, but love covereth all sins. In the lips of him that hath understanding, wisdom is found. But a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. Wise men lay up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near instruction. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. The labor of the righteous tendeth to life, the fruit of the wicked to sin. He is in the way of life that keepeth instruction, but he that refuseth reproof erreth. He that hideth hatred has lying lips, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool. In the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. The tongue of the just is like choice silver. The heart of the wicked is of little worth. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for want of wisdom. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. It is like sport to a fool to do mischief, but a man of understanding hath wisdom. The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted. As the whirlwind passeth, so is the wicked no more, but the righteous is an everlasting foundation. As vinegar to the teeth, and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to those who send him. The fear of the Lord prolongeth days, but the years of the wicked shall be shortened. The hope of the righteous shall be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked shall perish. The way of the Lord is strength to the upright, but destruction shall be to the workers of iniquity. The righteous shall never be removed, but the wicked shall not inhabit the earth. The mouth of the just bringeth forth wisdom, but the froward tongue shall be cut out. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked speaketh frowardness. Well, there you go. What observations do you make just off the cuff, just reading through this? What strikes you? You got the life of the righteous, life of the wicked, and these are a number of. Do you see any? What shall I say? Organization. I was thinking, Yogi Berra died. And today somebody posted a list of yogi-isms, which were, again, he was a unique guy. Share some yogi-ism. Deja vu all over again. It ain't over till it's over. Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. Yeah, what time is it? You mean now? Yeah. Oh, he was, that's right. Go to other people's funerals or they won't come to yours. Oh, what do you say? 90% of this game is mental. The other 50% is physical. Oh, he was full of them. But when you read a list of yogiisms, you don't see any scheme. There is no, okay, this one leads to this one and this one leads to this one. You don't follow a train of thought or logic. And the thought struck me that reading these proverbs is somewhat like reading yogiisms in the same sense. There's just no rhyme or reason. You don't have a clue what's coming next. It appears they're all sort of disconnected. They're sort of like beads on a necklace. And they really have no relationship, although they're next to each other, they really have no relationship with each other. Is that just me, or do you get sense the same thing? Yes. And that's that Eastern mindset again, and that's one of your exercises tonight. We're going to try to classify these into groups and see if we can see, okay, this is what we keep seeing, these themes that recur. We'll do that in a little bit. I wanted to remind you tonight of the types of Proverbs, because we want to look at this and analyze this chapter. And remember that when we started this, we said there were about seven basic types of kinds of Proverbs. Most of the time, these Proverbs are A-B organization. You have two lines. Every one of these is a two-line Proverb. Now, there are places that you get more thoughts and more verses involved, but every one of these are standalone. Each verse has two phrases. We call phrase the number one A, and phrase number two is B. Okay? And so when you have what's called a synonymous proverb, B is simply restating what you just stated in A. All right? So that's one type. it rewords the thought of line A. An example of that, Proverbs 11:26, in the next chapter, the liberal soul shall be made fat, but he that watereth shall be watered also himself. In other words, the fellow that waters somebody else's plants gets watered. That's the idea of the first line, is that the liberal soul shall be made fat. The fat guy just gets, the more he gives away, the more he gets. And that is amplified in the second line. Okay? You get an idea of a synonymous proverb. That's right. Fat's a good thing here. To have a fat soul is fine. That's my problem. I'm growing into my soul as time goes on. Everybody says there's a skinny person in me trying to get out. In my case, there's a fat person trying to get out, trying to express himself. Anyway, second kind, Proverbs of Contrast, where we have the idea of line B contrasts with line A. Notice we just had one in the very first verse here. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. And notice the juxtaposition between wise and foolish, and then glad and heaviness, and then father and mother. Everything about those two lines contrasts the one with the other. Proverbs of Comparison. Given a design here, it's line A is like line B. In other words, they're comparing two things. Notice, as cold waters to a thirsty soul, so is good news from a far country. In other words, to get good news from a far country is sort of like getting a cold drink when you're real thirsty. It's a refreshing thing. I don't know how far away that far country has to be for it becomes refreshing, but that's the idea. All right, satirical proverbs, where you're making fun. It's a humorous saying that mocks certain conduct. For instance, a slothful man hideth... I'm having a hard time reading. My glasses aren't heavy. A slothful man hideth his hand in his bosom, or a dish, and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. Now, that's lazy. You're so lazy that you get your fork down in the food, but you don't want to bring it to your mouth. That's lazy. And so notice, this is obviously overstating things, but it's making fun of a lazy man. Proverbs of Evaluation. Let's take a look. Line A is better than line B. Okay? Here's one, Proverbs 15:16. Better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. Would you rather be rich and have a lot of trouble, or would you have a little bit and the fear of the Lord, have God with you? There's the idea that one, a little, when you have God with it, is much better than having a lot and having trouble. All right? Proverbs of Consequence. Line B is what happens when you do line A. Proverbs 16:5, everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished. In other words, doesn't matter what he does, he will wind up being judged by God eventually. And then synthetic proverbs. Line B extends the thought of line A. Here we have Proverbs 15:3. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. In other words, the second phrase is amplifying what has been said in the first phrase. Now, all right, with that background, when you look at this chapter, what do you mainly see? What is it made up of? What's that? Contrasts. You notice how prevalent the word but is through this? Like that first one, the wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son. In fact, every single one of them are proverbs of contrast except for a few. Your next exercise is to locate the few that are not parables of contrast. What's that? 26. You're right. Has no but in it. What's that? 20. Who said 22? The blessing of the Lord, it makes rich, and he adds no sorrow to it. No but there. What did you say? The rich man's wealth is his strong city. Now, it doesn't have the word but I would say this is still a contrast. the destruction of the poor is their poverty. In other words, we got a contrast between the rich man and the poor man. Verse 10, that's the other one. He that winks with the eye, and by the way, he causes sorrow, especially if he's winking at somebody else's wife. But this is talking about winking in an evil sense. I'm not real sure what it meant to wink at somebody in the Hebrew ancient world, but it wasn't good when you wink at someone. And so you're causing sorrow. And notice that although in the King James there's a but here, in most of the other translations there's not, because it's not really a contrast. What's a prating fool, by the way? Babbling is the idea. Somebody just babbles at the mouth. You know anybody? Don't answer that. He that winks with the eye causes sorrow, and a prating fool shall fall. Okay? Notice we don't have a contrast there. It's both talking about foolish, evil conduct. So we basically, in this chapter, we have three of these proverbs that are not parables of proverbs of contrast. Verse 22 is, and the one about smoke and vinegar, 26. 10, 22, and 26. All right, what are those proverbs? Take a look at them. Huh? 10 is synthetic, and explain why. Okay, we're just adding new information to what the first line said. I would say that sounds very reasonable. All right, what about, let's look at 22. What would you say? Consequence? Well, you know, in a way it is. I was going to call it synthetic too, but you are right that it is a consequence that follows that not only does the blessing of the Lord make you rich, there is no sorrow attached to it. So it's sort of a consequence of the previous line. Yeah. All right, look at 26. As vinegar is to the teeth, I didn't experiment. Who has? What does this mean? Put your teeth on edge? In other words, I would think that drinking vinegar would get you, it's like irritate, bitter and sensitizes your teeth. Is that right? Anybody know? Who's? You drink vinegar every day. That's why you're in a model of health. He's actually 150 years old. You know. Well, what does it do to your teeth? I would think it would make them squeak. Health benefits. You look pretty healthy. Maybe we better all be trying vinegar. You what? It'll make you sick? Do you drink it straight? When Carolyn's bad, you give her vinegar. That was it, huh? Yeah, don't have to wash your mouth out with soap. Vinegar works just fine. Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking about what, I guess I have to go home and try it. And it would just seem like it would make my teeth sensitive, real sensitive. And what'd you say? Put them on edge. Yeah, put your teeth on edge. In other words, what's the point? It's an irritant. And that then follows the next line as smoke to the eyes. You know, you get around at the night's place, the smoke follows beauty, so it just goes wherever I go, and I've got it, you know, in my eyes and stuff. In other words, again, it's the idea of irritation. So is the sluggard to those who send him. Now, what kind of a proverb is this? That's what I would say. Comparison. You're saying, and that's what you're prominent with the word so. In other words, like this is this. So is the sluggard to those who send him. That's an interesting thought. Some of you have people that work for you, and you've got somebody that's lazy and careless and so forth, and you send them to do something, and they get distracted and so forth. The same kind of irritation that these other things are to you physically, they are to you in the way they do their stuff, in the way they do their thing. So in other words, it's irritating conduct instead of a physical irritation like vinegar and smoke. So yeah, so we've got in this chapter, which is basically Proverbs of contrast. Almost all of them have a but in there. However, these three seem to fall, and Connie found one that didn't have a but it's still sort of a contrast. Yes, Beth? Yes, yes. You know, it's 18, I think, the one that I had. Yes, in fact, I've got 18 written down here. He that hideth hatred has lying lips, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool. Okay? What kind of proverb would you call that? Does the second line extend the thought of the first line? Sort of. What does it mean, he that hides hatred? What does that mean? Okay, well, that's hatred, but what does it mean to hide it? Huh? It put on a facade that everything's okay when you actually hate and you're angry. And so what you're doing, he says, he that hides hatred has lying lips. In other words, what you say is not what you feel. You're hiding your hate. You're not speaking hate, but you're hiding hate. Okay, so it's the idea that your words then are not true. They're not reliable because you harbor hatred in your heart, but you wouldn't say it to their face. Okay? So the next thing is, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool. In other words, here is someone who repeats slander on another person. So in essence, it's not exactly the same thing, but they do have certain things in common. They're both about speech. So you got the speech of the one who flatters when he secretly hates, and the other then who speaks slander when he has no reason to do that. So it's sort of, again, this synthetic proverb where you amplify what's being said with the first phrase. You explain it a little more fully. Okay? That make sense? Okay, now here's your exercise is to tell me which of these proverbs sort of is your favorite or the one that perhaps catches your attention, the one that perhaps is applicable to your situation, whatever those things apply. And you got two circled. Okay, which two do you have? Yeah, okay. Lazy man. A little reminder. We have an expression today that expresses very similar sentiments. Make hay while the sun shines. In other words, you don't sleep in when it's harvest time. Now, if you hadn't grown up on a farm, you probably don't realize the importance of that. But man, when it was harvest time, my dad, I don't know when they ever quit. They would work late into the night, get up early the next morning, hit them again. Because you have this brief window of gathering the harvest, getting the crop in. And you miss that, bad weather sets in, you may lose your crop. So you've got to hit them just as hard as you can go for that brief period of time. Doesn't last necessarily a long, couple of weeks usually. But during the harvest, you've got to go. And so the one that sleeps in during the summer, and notice summer and harvest are parallel thoughts here. That's when their harvest came in. By the fall, you remember by the time of the Feast of Tabernacles in October, the harvest already gathered. Everything's over. And a lot of times, like we were just picking cotton in October, right in the middle of harvest. But in Israel, your harvest is pretty much gathered in by the fall. So summertime is when you go and make your crop. Okay, Joe has those, the ones about laziness. Wonder why, I don't know. Hey, you got them circled. That's good. That's good. Somebody else? Yeah, Barry? Okay. Well, you still hadn't answered my question. Which one speaks to you? Any one of those 10? Now, that's one of the exercises we're going to do when we get through with this is classify them, and you're already well on your way. I'll let you think about it. Okay. Yes, Charles. That's fun. Yeah. 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 What's fun about that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. The last thing on his mind is trying to get wise. Because that's going to cut into his fun. You're exactly right. That's a good observation. All right? Somebody else see one that... Yes, Barbie? Yeah. Yeah. That hits a lot of us, doesn't it? That the idea of your children are going to be, to a large degree, a source of either great joy or great pain in your life, one or the other. And therefore, wisdom then becomes more than just a hobby or an intellectual exercise. It is that wise child that brings gladness to the parent. Foolish children bring sadness. Like I say, you have a lot at stake, really, in your kids. You listening, John? Yeah, listening? Yeah, okay. The idea of making your mother cry would normally, not always, but would normally really prick someone's heart and conscience that they have caused their mother to cry. And so here is the method. Here's the scheme. Okay? Somebody else? Yeah. 19. Boy, that's a good one. That is an amazing verse. In other words, the more you talk, the more you're going to wind up lying. The more you try to work your way out of something and explain it away. In other words, methinketh the lady protesteth too much, Shakespeare says. The many words is a dead giveaway that there's something wrong. That the wise man, as the other side of it, he that refrains his lips is wise. The wise man, I guess, I hate to get into politics, but that's what impresses me about somebody like Ben Carson, is that he's a man of few words, but his words are very much full of substance when he speaks, which is probably why he's not going to get elected. But anyway, that's what impresses me about the guy. And he's not someone just babbles off at the mouth like some unnamed folks would be. All right. But yeah, that's a good one, Tim. And it's not just true in politics that we have the same problem when we're trying to excuse our way out of something or talk our way out of something. Many words is usually a clue that there's something else going on here. Yes, ma'am. They never paid rent, but they. Yeah. Yeah. You have to ask yourself, why is she bringing up this stuff about a drug test? You're sort of tipping your hand here. Apparently that has been a big issue in the past. Yeah. And it's like the more people talk. And I was going to think you were talking about people who are late on the rent, their excuses. And the idea of just talk, coming up with all these reasons why they can't pay their rent on time. And it's the same thing. The more they talk, the more they tip their hand of what's really going on. Well, then we have the what's the prating tongue down here? You remember the babbler? Don't see it right now. Yeah, what's the old thing is, better to keep your mouth shut and people think you're a fool than open it up and to remove all doubt. And that's true. Yeah, that's just such a broad thing there. Could be parenting, could be work at work, could be, but it's back to that idea that there's this path of learning, keeping instruction, then there is this other path. Not only puts you in error, but takes a lot of folks with you. Okay, anybody else see something that catches your eye? Beth? Well, that was one of my questions. Which one of these proverbs is going to be referred to in the section I'm covering? Guess which one? Verse 12. Love covers a multitude of sins is in the next we're going to be dealing with in 1 Peter. So in other words, you think, well, this has absolutely nothing to do with the New Testament, where we are and what we're living. Well, lo and behold, one of these is picked out, quoted by Peter in support of what he's teaching. Okay? Anybody else? Yeah. 21. All right, why? Mm-hmm. Did somebody, verse 21, if you read that, anybody got an NIV? What you got, Joe? In other words, the fool starves to death for lack of judgment, while the lips of the righteous feed many. The juxtaposition of those two ideas of being fed and full, the other is starving. You begin to see that then in the eyes of the Proverbs, the wise man is a producer, feeds many. The foolish man is purely a consumer. He's just like a weed. soaking up resources like a parasite living off everybody else. Pretty much commentary on our day. Okay, I wanted you to also give some time to classify in your mind these proverbs, because as Oscar pointed out, you do see this cyclical thing. In other words, they're not strung together. They're not saying, okay, we're going to have all the... Barry's already given you one class dealing with speech, right? And rather than the Proverbs saying, okay, we've got a chapter on Proverbs dealing with speech, now we're going to have a chapter over here on something else, they're just all thrown in there, jumbled together. And it's like, again, that Eastern mind, you're just coming back and reinforcing the same notions over and over again. So if you look at these Proverbs, how would you classify them? What's the topics that more than one of them fall under? Yep. The idea of industry, those that Joe circled for some reason. the idea of being busy in the harvest time and so forth. In other words, that work and wealth tend to go together. And the opposite side of that is laziness and poverty tend to go together. And again, these are proverbs. Doesn't always mean it's that way, but proverbially, that's true. Wisdom and righteousness go together. Foolishness and sin goes together. In other words, we've got several proverbs that deal with that category, that the righteous conduct is the evidence of wisdom. Okay? Any other things you notice here? The idea of being, yeah, understanding. I think there's several terms in here that speak of the person who will be instructed as opposed to the person that won't. And there's several that fall into that idea. There's another area that really jumps out at me. Well, there's wise and foolish all the way through here. What I was thinking of is the perpetuity, the permanentness of the wise and the temporariness of the foolish. That is hit several times here. For instance, verse 30, the righteous shall never be removed, but the wicked shall not inhabit the earth. In other words, you got one group that will never be removed, never lose life. The other side will never see life. So you've got that contrast, and several of these follow that. In verse 7, I was thinking about this in relationship to Linda. The memory of the just is blessed. And, of course, on the contrary side, the name of the wicked shall rot. In other words, there's an endurance. Here's that enduring that permanents. Even the memory of those who have passed away still lasts. Whereas there's some folks, they just disappear and you're glad they're gone. Anything else anybody see? I've got several down here. Joy and gladness versus heaviness. That's a set of proverbs. Riches and wealth versus poverty and loss. Peace and blessing versus violence and destruction. That interesting thought, and several of these proverbs fall into that. That the wise man receives peace, the foolish man is blessing. Charles, I was thinking about the folks that you mentioned a while ago that live for sport, you know, for fun. It's amazing how violence tends to target those people. In other words, where do most of the murders take place? It's down at the bars. It's the honky-tonks. It's the clubs. It's the, right? That's where most of this stuff, not always, but the vast majority of it is taking place in certain spots where people are there who are not wise. And so they become easy prey for violence. So it's interesting that the man of peace who seeks peace tends to live in peace. You know, as Paul says, as much as life within you, live at peace with all men. And that's a pretty good recipe of to be untouched by violence. Stay away from the places where the violent go. Makes sense? And so you've got that contrast. And several of these proverbs fall in there. The traits of the wise versus the traits of the foolish. Connie mentioned that. Industry and hard work versus laziness and idleness. Joe mentioned that. and then preservation and long life, as opposed to removal and a short life and a life cut short. In the other hand, okay. Just wanted to make you go through this and look at these things closely and start trying to categorize them, try to classify. We won't do this all the way. This is a long book. We've got a whole bunch of these. But I thought it'd be a good exercise tonight for us to remember the kinds of Proverbs that we're talking about, that there's different kinds. What are these kinds? What are the few exceptions here in this chapter? It's almost universally Proverbs of contrast. Okay. Anybody got any other observations? Yes, Laura. They're not very, or almost on the phone all the time. Well, yeah, unless you're a salesman. in other words, for some reason they like to talk and talk instead of work in the case. Yeah, that's the fellow who's bragging about it. He gets sent to work on the sink or the toilet. Yeah. Yeah, right. I get the picture. Yeah. Kitty, were you? Yeah, yeah. Interesting. It strikes me that there is a sense. We say, well, what does that have to do with Christianity? What does that have to do with? Do you not see that when someone becomes a Christian, when there's a conversion from a lifestyle to a new lifestyle, and I'm talking about a Christian lifestyle, let's speak of it as a change of mode of living, that it is indeed a conversion from foolishness to wisdom. That there is a wise lifestyle that goes along with being a Christian. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't do foolish things as Christians or that some Christians still are pretty foolish. But in the general course of things, there is and I'm already thinking ahead to Sunday, there's a sobriety attached to being a Christian that you've literally sobered up. You've wised up. You've sort of matured in the sense that you don't do this sporting stuff anymore. In other words, you look back on those days and say, that was dumb. What was I thinking? That we no longer participate in that foolishness that used to just absolutely engulf us. Isn't that strange? And that most of the time we don't even have to tell somebody that. They just start all of a sudden living different. And most of the lost people tend to know that. That's why they don't want to be a Christian. Because they know Christians are supposed to act wisely in spiritual matters, in conduct, and how you behave yourself, how you talk, and so forth. And that's why they don't want to be one. You know, that's part of the resistance. But when someone truly is converted to Christ, it's amazing how smart they get, how wise they get. And that's a strange thing. They've sobered up. It's like that prodigal son that came to himself and said, hey, this is nuts. I'm going home. Man, did he get smart. If we just figure out how to knock some sense into people, I'll get me a tube or four and we'll go do it. But it's only the Spirit of God that can. Anyway, Charles? Well, I think there is a caution toward, as far as legalism is concerned, and it's the observation that let's remember these are not ironclad promises. There's a difference between a promise and a proverb. And so a proverb is not universally true. There will be exceptions. So we got to make, in other words, the fact is I dare not approach these saying, okay, I want to be wealthy. And so the way to get wealthy is to do what this says, because it says the wise man gets wealthy. There is the danger that we see the proverbs as a tool, a legalistic tool. It's the health and wealth gospel in a new garb. And we see it as a means to an end. Whereas wisdom is an end to itself. It's something that needs to be sought for itself, whether or not there's any reward. Whether or not, most of the time, is there a reward? You bet there is. To hard work, to thrift, to industry, to applying yourself to knowledge and wisdom. Does that normally mean you get ahead? Absolutely. But is it always? No. And shouldn't be looked at as a guarantee. And then I think you have to keep a balance is how does the rest of the Bible employ these things? and they don't, you don't find a New Testament book that's nothing but a bunch of Proverbs strung, you know, from, you find them every now and then, like we're dealing with one Sunday. So, on the one hand, the New Testament apostle looked at this and saw it as inspired and employed them for his purpose, but he didn't go to seed. So I think the balance has to be kept. Oscar, you were going to say? The meat.
Yeah, right.
Blessedness. Yeah, you're right. In other words, some of these use money as the tool to get you to think that there's other kinds of payment besides paycheck. And there's other kind, it's sort of the proverb that we had up there a moment ago, that little with God is a lot better than a lot with sorrow. And so there's other kinds of paydays besides the day you get your check. So, yeah, you're exactly right. These sometimes they have a deep aspect to it. We live in a foolish, foolish world. And I guess every generation that has gotten old looks at the younger generation coming up and shakes its head. These kids don't have enough sense coming out of the rain. Look at you, Tim. Two comments. First of all, I am glad in our fellowship we have a lot of young couples that are on the path to wisdom, what I would call the path. That is rare in our time. And that brings me to my other observation. We got a big mess out there. And yeah, it's always been that way, but we have special things going on in our culture today. There is more power to do evil available to you today than ever before. Think about growing up on a farm. If I'd wanted to rebel against my father, what was I going to do? Get off the tractor and sit in the sun? Not going to plow? Might as well be up there plowing. I mean, there's just so much trouble I could get into. What a whole lot of trouble you could find out there in the middle of the field plowing. But you take today's culture, trouble is easy to find. It's at your fingertips. Anywhere you look, you can find it. You find people. And again, another thing that has changed is that basically, although trouble was there, the culture tend to disapprove of it. There was a peer pressure. The people that you typically ran into tended to thwart. They tend to put the brakes on that kind of stuff. Today, you can find your crowd. If you want to run with the wild crowd, you can find them. They're out there, and they'll egg you on. They'll make the most perverse, bizarre behavior, make it seem normal and right. So there's special things going on in our day. I don't think we've ever seen before. We need to be in prayer, especially growing up in the middle. Well, let's conclude.